Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington, D.C.
It has come to a point whereby we need to understand that protest in Nigeria is actually constitutional. It is covered by Section 39 of the provisions of the Nigerian Constitution.
Lawyers and civil society groups call for an investigation of police officers for using excessive force during the End Bad Governance protests.
I'm saying that if the government officers in Maputo, they are not afraid of engaging themselves in corruption because the justice in Mozambique will let them free, now they can fear that, okay, if we steal money in Mozambique, there's a risk that we can be arrested somewhere, traveling somewhere, and taken to United States, prosecuted, and tried, and convicted.
A Mozambican anti-graft crusader says a U.S. court conviction of a former finance minister over corruption gives hope to continue fighting financial malfeasance and wrongdoing.
The people realize that the song of the struggle is over. Now we are fighting for economic freedom. We are fighting to own our own resources.
And Namibia's opposition All People's Party, or APP, elects Ambrosius Kumbwa as its presidential candidate ahead of the coming November general election. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. A coalition of lawyers and civil society groups are calling for an independent investigation and prosecution of security officers accused of using excessive force during the End Bad Governance protest. It comes after Amnesty International reports at least 13 people have died and many others injured in the nationwide protest against what organizers say is poor governance in Nigeria. The police force has since denied using excessive force against the demonstrators. They had warned the protest would be hijacked by hoodlums and bandits. Attorney Samuel Ihezekian is a prominent Nigerian human rights lawyer. In an interview with VOA, he condemns the use of excessive force by the police against protesters who were lawfully demonstrating against the challenges facing the country.
The demand by the coalition of lawyers for the End Bad Governance protest is one. In the course of this protest, there have been very viral and very severe allegations against the instrumentality of Nigerian security forces jointly. Amnesty International has released a report that more than 13 persons were killed during this last protest. There were suppression, detention, brutality on even journalists like you in Nigeria. So it has come to a point whereby we need to understand that protest in Nigeria is actually constitutional. It is covered by Section 39 of the provisions of the Nigerian Constitution. So the lawyers in Nigeria, beyond the coalition, other groups, organized civil society, they are actually calling for basically a couple of demands. That is a thorough investigation as to the trending videos where Nigerian policemen, mostly when they were seen actually brutalizing, assaulting, tear gassing, and taking very, very crude steps against Nigerian cities, contrary to the Nigerian Anti-Torture Act. Two, they are also calling for an independent investigation to be carried out on these officers, security officers jointly. Then thirdly, they are asking for discipline, for reprimand. They are also asking for sanctions against this police officer.
The chief of police says the police did not use excessive force, especially when there are reports, and he admits and says that at least a police officer was killed during these demonstrations.
You know, in our law here, we say res ipsa locuto, the facts speak for themselves. When you make a very blanket statement, when you make a very unfounded statement, and there are actually videos, which I've seen some, where you see police hitting citizens, shooting tear gas, what can be more unfounded than that? You know, the Nigerian police have to know and understand that we are not in a police state. The whole essence of police is covered by Section 83, sub 3 of the Nigerian Police Act. Their duty when it comes to protest is simply to protect and guide citizens. when they have come for mass gathering, when they are protesting peacefully, or when they converge. It does not extend to brutality of any kind.
But Samuel, the security agencies have said that hoodlums hijacked the protest, looting and clashing with the police, and the organizers of the protest and those who participated in it are to blame, especially when they were warned that these, including Boko Haram militants, would hijack the protest, which we saw, they argue. What do you say to that?
My candid advice to the police force, if they have ample evidence that any of these organizers of this, not charade prosecution or charade allegations against them, any of these protesters, any of these organizers of this protest, if they have ample evidence that they actually constituted infractions of our, whether the penal code or the criminal code, my advice is for them to go against them. But I can tell you, these are people who came out in the front burner. Funny enough, we see some of them in the TV. They came out and said they were the organizers of this peaceful protest. And they had parties. They even had discussions on Vitua and Zoom with the IG of police. And they made their motives known. So to what extent can you hold them culpable for some criminals who came in the guise of protest to commit crimes? As I said before, there are ample provisions in our law that when people commit crimes in the guise of protest, is for the police to apprehend those people. That is the main essence of police. That is the main essence of security job by the police. It's not for you to generalize and say, because this happened, you now hold some persons you feel you can hold. Generally, I don't feel they have a case against those organizers of the protest. The people who actually, from experience, the NSAS experience and every other experience, some of these people who come to commit heinous crime during protest, these are sheer criminals. And that is why the police are enjoyed to be around this protest ground. As soon as they are able to identify and spot this criminal element, you arrest them. You don't wait when things degenerate into a cohorts. Then you start making statements you are going to. What are you going to vicariously hold these organizers of the protest liable for the crimes they never committed? That is the question.
Samuel Ihezekien is a leading human rights lawyer in Nigeria. He spoke with me from the Nigerian capital, Abuja. The Ghana Alternative Party, an opposition group, has formed a coalition with the National Liberation Congress, or NLC, ahead of the coming December 7 general election. The move, the party says, is to help defeat the ruling New Patriotic Party, or NPP. Ghana's recent political landscape has been dominated by two main parties, the governing NPP and the main opposition National Democratic Congress, or NDC. Osahene Nana Ejei Boateng, chairman and founder of the Ghana Alternative Party, tells me that the coalition wants to break the dominance of the NPP and the NDC.
This decision emanated just last 2 years when we were going for our provisional certificate at the Electoral Commission. We went there and then we met NLC, the founder, Atubiga. But we had in our plans that we won't be even contesting for this year. We wanted to come fully in 2028. But looking at the dynamics and then looking at the airway, we felt that waiting at this moment wouldn't be a better decision for our followers. So the resources that we are having, we don't want to render them useless. So we decided to join forces with NLC to come up with a new vibrant energy to shape up the duopoly of NDC and NPP. Based on the principles, the values, ideologies of NLC, we feel that we are compatible with what they are doing. That is why we have joined forces with them.
So, Mr. Boateng, what do you think your support means for the NLC? Because you are a relatively new party with, some people say, a limited following or support. So what do you bring to the table for the NLC?
You know, politics is all about message. We have tabled a lot of solutions for this country. We have in-depth knowledge as to how to provide lasting and pragmatic solutions to most of the crippling challenges that we are having in this country. So we are bringing top-notch ideas that every Ghanaian is yearning for based on the current issues that we are having as a nation. You know, If you look at Ghana Alternative Party, as the name suggests, alternative, that is option to what we have already. Well, we have implemented about 10 key agenda, 10-point agenda, that we feel that if we are being given the north, we'll be able to propel the nation. So having been able to organize our grassroots members for at least for the past 2 years, not only members that we are bringing on board, we are bringing cogent ideas.
You talked about the duopoly of the New Patriotic Party, the NPP, and the National Democratic Congress, the NDC. These two parties have led the country since the Fourth Republic. What makes you think that the coalition or the alliance between the Ghana Alternative Party and the NLC would dislodge the ruling party coming this December?
The slogan of the incumbent, the Baumia's campaign, they are saying it is possible. Okay? If they are saying it is possible, it tells you that in this world, everything is possible.
What is the message here to the people of Ghana? Because obviously, recent polls show that the NPP and the NDC remain very strong, and either party could win, although the ruling party has advantages. So what makes you think that you can dislodge them, realistically speaking?
The youth of this country have been crying foul for so many years. That is why if you go to most of the embassies in the country, the youth keep trooping in each day and night, all because of seeking for greener pasture. So our policy is this. We are going to introduce the proper definition of the 24-hour economy, meaning most of the things that we import from other parts of the world, we are going to make sure that we set up industries, we set up factories. Not we setting up, we are going to bring most of these big companies from other parts of the world. We have already started talking to them. As I speak to you, we have a partial agreement with about 550 giant companies who are willing to come into the country to establish. And we will be giving them tax incentives to waive up their tax so that they can employ most of our people. And then when they set up this company, the rate at which we import or even change our CD for the dollar before bringing these items will be a thing of the past.
Osahene Nana Ejeboateng is chairman and founder of the Ghana Alternative Party. He spoke with me from the Ghanaian capital, Accra. A prominent anti-graft crusader says a U.S. court conviction of a former finance minister over corruption gives hope to continue to fight financial malfeasance and wrongdoing in Mozambique. Borges Inhamiri of the Public Integrity Center says it seems the judicial system in Mozambique appears to be disinterested in going after those with political influence accused of corruption. His remarks come after a U.S. jury convicted former Mozambican finance minister Manuel Chang in a financial conspiracy case that welled up from his country's tuna bond scandal. Chang was accused of accepting bribes to put his African nation secretly on the hook for big loans to government-controlled companies for tuna fishing ships and other maritime projects. The former minister is facing 20 years in prison. For reaction, I reach Borges Inhamiri of the Public Integrity Center in Maputo.
Well, my reaction is to say that this gives us hope. Yeah, I won't say I'm happy, but I will say that this gives us hope because corruption in Mozambique prevails because of impunity. This is the main reason. Government officers can steal government's money, spend it in the country and abroad, and nothing serious happens with them. So we have a lot of ministers who have been convicted in Mozambique. But this is not serious stuff, you know. They don't serve in prison, for example. If they serve in prison, it will be just 2 to 3 years, and then they are free. Okay, the asset that they have earned from the corruption, it prevails with them. So this is the main problem in Mozambique. So the justice in Mozambique is trying to do something, but it's not independent enough. is not independent enough to punish those people and prevent that corruption can still continue in Mozambique. So this situation that we see here now in the United States, our former Minister of Finance, Mr. Chang, becoming the very first Mozambican government officer to be arrested and convicted abroad. This gives us hope that if our justice has failed, now maybe we can trust in someone else who can do justice for Mozambicans who have been victim of corruption.
Are you saying that this could be used as a lesson for the judicial system in Mozambique?
I'm saying that if the government offices in Maputo, they are not afraid of engaging themselves in corruption because the justice in Mozambique will let them free. Now they can fear that, okay, if we steal money in Mozambique, there's a risk that we can be arrested somewhere, traveling somewhere, and taken to United States, prosecuted, and tried, and convicted in independent court. So this is the lesson. This is the lesson that if our justice in Mozambique is weak, cannot stand against the politician, the powerful people, at least a government somewhere can do that for us.
But Boji, some of his supporters are saying that Mr. Chang is being used as a scapegoat because cabinet approved or were behind and supported this loan agreement, and he, as a minister, just signed off on it because President Amando Guebuza at the time even approved of it. So why is he being the only person being targeted, they argue?
This is very simple to explain. You know, people who make this kind of comment, maybe they are not aware on how the criminal justice works. So you might be 10 people committing a crime, but the crime is personal, you know. So you might be 10 people who engage in a crime, and everyone will have its different approach, because it depends on how you participated. So this is one by one, and this is what we need to reflect on now. Chang was just the first guy who was caught. We don't know if there are other many people who are also being investigated and what will happen with them once they fall in the hands of the justice. So this is the issue. We cannot say bring all of them together at the same time and try them at the same time. No, this is not how the justice works.
In your view, what message do you think this conviction sends to the people of Mozambique, especially for groups like you or anti-corruption activists like yourself?
It gives us hope. It gives us hope that we keep the struggle. We keep the struggle against corruption. And above all, that we are not alone in this struggle. If our government is captured, if our government justice system has been captured and cannot work, then we can have someone else who can assist. It gives us hope that we need to keep engaging with different people internationally. Because let me say, you have seen it. Mozambique civil society has conducted an international campaign against hidden debt. So this is something that has been done beyond Mozambique borders. Activists traveled to the UK to meet, for example, with prosecutors there. Mozambican traveled to the US for campaign. Mozambican traveled to Switzerland for campaign. And then this is what we see now, is the international response to this, our struggle. This is the international response to our struggle. So this gives us hope to keep the struggle on, to keep us fighting against corruption in Mozambique.
Borges Inamiri is of the Public Integrity Center in the Mozambican capital, Maputo. He spoke with me from New York. Namibia's opposition All People's Party, or APP, has elected Ambrosius Kumbwa as its presidential candidate ahead of the coming November general election. It followed the party's congress at Rundu over the weekend. The presidential candidate says he plans to implement a new political strategy to wrestle power from the governing SWAPO party, which has ruled Namibia since independence. Political observers expressed doubt about the electoral prospects of the APP. But Ambrosius Kumbwa tells me that his vision of the equal distribution of the country's natural resources is generating a lot of support across the country.
I say that I, in person, believe in the philosophy of humanism, and the very problem that we have in Namibia is the unequal distribution of resources, whether it is nationally or on a regional level, or that align with staff empowerment, like when people are given higher positions in government and agencies and directorates. We have a big disparities in Namibia. So my fight is to unite the people of Namibia in whatever space they find themselves. That is also the initial objective that was at the foundation of this party. When we formed this party, that was the formation of people united to be one and to consider anti-discriminatory activities in the country.
Realistically, what do you think your chances are to winning this presidential vote?
My chances is stemming from the following points I can mention. The people realized that the songs of the struggle is over. Now we are fighting for economic freedom. We are fighting to own our own resources. In contrary, the freedom fighters who went abroad did not consider this up to this time, because what they consider is only the people who went to fight for the struggle, to win the struggle, and that is always in their speeches. But the people say, no, we must leave these speeches about freedom fighter, we must now concentrate on economy. So, majority in my region support the organization. Some regions, the rest of the region, that is now 12 regions, we have representation on our top leadership in the party. This means that I will gain support. I will go beyond the 2 seats currently to go about 5, 7 seats. That is my dreaming.
How do you plan on defeating or breaking the dominance of SWAPO, which has been in government since leading the country into independence?
I have foot soldiers where I introduce village campaign. With village campaign, I don't need more resources like car and fuel and many materials, but only the campaign is orientated, only restricted at the specific village, with people from the same village who have to run the campaign with the necessary information from the party, material from the party, and the message from the party. So SWAPO is using many cars, a lot of fuel, and so to say, it goes together with bribery. So the people came to understand that no, bribery is not the good mindset of a person to lead. But we have to concentrate on the right mind of a person who is messy and compassionate to other people.
Ambrosius Kumbwa is presidential candidate of Namibia's opposition All People's Party, or APP. He spoke with me from the Namibia capital, Windhoek. In Malawi, incumbent President Lazarus Chakwera and former President Peter Arthur Mutharika will face each other in the coming presidential contest. Both leaders will lead their respective political parties in the elections. Chakwera will lead the governing Malawi Congress Party, or MCP, while Mutharika leads the main opposition Democratic Progressive Party, or DPP. It will be a repeat of the last election between the president and his predecessor when Chakwera was declared winner. Some Malawians question why the two main parties appear to have not encouraged an internal challenge to the two candidates. They also questioned why there is not a young person in the contest, especially when a majority of the population are young people. For analysis of the latest political development, I reach Boniface Dulani. He is a political scientist from the University of Malawi.
I'm not surprised that we will end up with this rematch. The MCP and the DPP remain the two of the most widely supported parties in the country. I think the passing of the late Vice President Salos Chilima also meant that I think one of the possible third party candidates is no longer available. So, yes, I think we end up with Chakwera and Mutharika once more. But unlike, I think, 2020, where I think President Chakwera won, I think, in the first round with a clear majority, at least the most recent polling would suggest that none of those two candidates are likely to get a majority, at least in the first round. So we are very likely going to go into a second round. Again, most likely with those two as the main contestants, and then to see what will happen after that.
The country is about 54% youth. Why does it appear that the youth is far away from even attaining or challenging internally these two contestants to even give them the opportunity to contest on one of these largest following political parties ahead of the elections?
Indeed, you're right. That at the last election, actually, 54% of the voters were categorized as youth. And yet, I think we've always had presidential candidates that are much older. I mean, the president, former President Mutharika is in his early to mid-80s, and President Chakwera is also in his 60s. I mean, so this, despite the fact that we have a majority of the electorate being youth, we see that our politics is largely dominated by the elders. I think this is maybe partly because of Malawian culture, and I would do, you know, I'm kind of hesitant to say African culture, but, you know, a Malawian culture that tends to value what one would consider the wisdom of the elders. When we have again asked Malawians whether, you know, we should listen more to the views of the youth, listen more and be guided by the wisdom of the elders, majority of Malawians actually prefer listening and being guided by wisdom of the elders. And it's interestingly enough, that also includes a majority of the youth themselves who tend to value that wisdom of elders. So it's not surprising that we end up with this kind of politics that is dominated mostly by elders, and with the youth really hardly being given opportunities to stand and make their case for leadership position.
What do you say to some observers who think that having a rematch or a recontest of the two political leaders, incumbent President Chakwera and then former President Atta Mutharika, does not really give Malawians a choice at all?
I would respectfully disagree, because what we actually are seeing is that we have a former president who was only in office for one term, and the Malawians, of course, soundly rejected him at the ballot. Now, I think that was also partly because the current president, Chakwera, had made a lot of promises, and he's had now a record on which he can be judged, and the people will now go to the ballot to say, okay, here we have two, you know, individuals that have both served that office of a president, and based on their record, who among them are we going to choose? Of course, it's likely that there will be other candidates, you know, in the elections for president, but I don't see any of them really garnering enough support to even, get their deposit back. So at the end of the day, you know, these are the two most widely supported political parties. And if Malawians were inclined to go for other alternatives, they would have done so. But of course, both Chakwera as well as Mutharika are eligible to contest by the letter of the law. So nothing really stands in their way.
Boniface Zulani is a political scientist from the University of Malawi. He spoke with me from the Malawian capital, Lilongwe. You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English to Africa service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotty, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, The Kenyan National Union of Teachers and the Kenyan Union of Post-Primary Education Teachers are warning of an imminent industrial strike action to press on their demands for improved living conditions. They are calling for the full implementation of the second phase of the Collective Bargaining Agreement of 2021 to 2025. The demands come after the teachers' groups accused the Teachers Service Commission of breaching the agreement by failing to implement the second phase of the addendum effective from July 1st for all teachers, including basic salaries and allowances. But an official of the Teachers Service Commission says a budget reduction from the government is the cause of the delay of the implementation of the agreement. But Collins Oyu, the Secretary General of the National Union of Teachers, tells me that industrial action will interfere with the academic calendar.
Kenya National Union of Teachers and the KUPET went in an agreement with Kenya, Teachers Service Commission last year in the amended CBA, which was run for two phases, July 2023 to June 2024. Then July 2024 to June 2025. So Teachers Service Commission has literally refused to honor the second phase of this agreement. So we are demanding that they implement the second phase in full and even backdate it to July 1st. Failure to which, schools will not open on the 26th of August this year. That is the position.
So that is the ultimatum for the Teachers Service Commission to implement the second phase of the collective bargaining agreement?
Yes, yes. So they have to, because a collective bargaining agreement is a legal document that is so binding. You know, once we sign, we deposit the agreement in a court of law, Employment and Labor Relations Court. How again do you turn around to say that you cannot honor what you signed and agreed and deposit the court of law? The moment we sign phases of an agreement, it has to be appear in the, that is already in the pay slip of teachers. So there's no renegotiation for what has been signed as that is spread on Facebook.
But wouldn't you allow for a conversation or a dialogue with the Teacher Service Commission to find out the challenges for which
we gave them? We gave them an ultimatum. We gave an ultimatum of 7 days so that we dialogue within the next 7 days. Failure to which, we shall give a legal strike notice to Teacher Service Commission and the Ministry of Labour as per the requirements of the law.
But wouldn't your demand upend the academic calendar and affect students who will be taking exams?
That industrial action shall interfere with the academic calendar of exams. And this is the best time to call for industrial action when teachers and learners are preparing for exams.
But Mr. Collins, the government reduced the budget of the Teacher Service Commission by 10.2 billion shillings. And the suggesting is that there's not enough money to meet the collective bargaining agreement. So a little time will help if the budget is improved to meet those commitments. Your thoughts?
Teacher Service Commission is under obligation to look for funds. If the government reduced the budget allocation, let them now negotiate with the government. It is not our duty to negotiate with the government for extra funds. So the collective bargaining agreement, phase two, has nothing to do with the reduced budget, nothing at all at all. The finance bill 2024 actually got this thing in place. So it is upon Teacher Service Commission, because it is not even 10 billion. It is 13.5 billion. TSC can source around and look for 13.5 billion.
Collins Oyu is the Secretary General of the Kenyan National Union of Teachers. He spoke with me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. Africa has its own special fan zone at the Paris Olympics. It's a place where Africa's citizens and supporters can come together and celebrate the continent's sports victories and put its conflict and political divisions aside. For VOA, Lisa Bryan reports from the Africa Station.
For Olympics fans wanting to get away from the crowds and concrete of Paris, this is the place to go. And bring kids on summer vacations, including maybe some future Olympic athletes. It's also a place to sample African cuisine and artisanship.
Mon point de vue sur
Sabina Sambu is a Senegalese businesswoman living in France. She says what she likes about the Africa Station is its cultural mix. Lots of cultures, lots of countries, lots of languages. I think it's really important that Africa finds itself together here today, she says. This Nigerian stand isn't just selling Nigerian goods. Cameroonian entrepreneur Danielle Bingono explains.
We found out different entrepreneurs from Mali, Burkina Faso, Cameroon, and Senegal. So we are here to share what we do the best. For example, here we have some fabric made in Africa. We also have some soap, natural soap.
The continent's Olympic athletes and celebrities come here. On Wednesday, the Democratic Republic of Congo was in the spotlight. Music and dancing are in, politics are out. This fan zone aims to be neutral, welcoming countries like Mali, which has rocky relations with France and a number of African nations. French Malian businessman Abdoulaye Sidibe runs the Mali stand. He says this is the place where Africans can come together to celebrate their victories, but also mark their defeats. There's lots of solidarity. He can visit Guinea and Senegal here without taking a plane. African teams have scored victories at the Paris Olympics. Kailia Namur won Africa's first Olympic gold in gymnastics, representing Algeria. South Sudan's young basketball team has made headlines, even though it didn't make the finals. People here say the continent needs more support to level the playing field. Pierre Mbass works for non-profit group Diambas, which runs sports education academies in Africa and France. He says there are some good African teams, like South Sudan's basketball team or the Egyptian and Moroccan soccer teams, but it's hard for other African athletes who lack good infrastructure and training. The evening is setting in, but at the Africa Station, the party is only just beginning. Lisa Bryant, VOA News, Île-Saint-Denis, France.
American athlete Yared Nuguse took the bronze in Tuesday's 1,500 meters race at the Olympics in Paris. Nuguse, whose parents migrated from Ethiopia, said he had a lot of fun in running the race. On the line to Paris, he shared his excitement with VOA Horn of Africa Service reporter Berthe Silton.
I think it's appropriate to say congratulations.
It is, yes. Thank you so much. It's been a very fun few days.
How was racing in a big stadium and a big crowd like that?
It was amazing. I had a lot of fun just being able to, you know, go out there. The crowd was so, so loud, and the race was so much fun. Competing against those guys, running so fast. We were just going so hard the entire race. And when I came to the end of the race and I was like right there on the cusp of getting a medal, I felt the crowd get so loud, and it was so amazing. And yeah, I was able to come away with the bronze, and it was great.
Yes, but I was watching the race, and do you think you use all your potentials, your energy to finish? I thought you can even be number one.
I think I really did give everything I had. In a race like a 1500, it's kind of hard to tell because there's so many different things you can do. But, you know, when I was coming down that last 100 meters, I gave it everything I had. And even if I was close to second and pretty close to first too, I still feel like, you know, I gave it everything I had. And so that's what's most important. And I'm still really happy with how I did.
So what experience are you getting from this venue?
Yeah, I think, you know, the Olympics is a very unique experience because everyone comes and they're all giving it their best shot. So everyone's going to be very hard to beat. The crowd is going to be amazing and all that stuff. So, you know, I think I learned to be a little more confident for sure. You know, in races like this, there's a lot of good guys, but I know I'm really good too. So it really helps to, you know, just to be able to, in future races, feel more confident now that I know I have a bronze medal for sure.
So your future, is it going to be on 1500 or you'll have another race also to be involved with this?
No, I'll probably just do the 1500. Maybe in a couple of years, I'll start doing the 5K too. But my 1500 is my favorite race, so I will probably keep doing that for a while.
That's great. How old are you, Jared?
I turned 25 recently.
Wow, you still have a long way to go.
Yep, I'm still young, still very young, so that's really good for the next Olympics and just next year.
Congratulations, Jared.
Thank you so much.
That was Jared Noguchi, the American athlete who took bronze in the 1500 meters race at the Olympics. He spoke with VOA Horn of Africa service reporter Bertie Seltan. And right now it's time for music from our African collection.
Rub your chest if you please. Oh, hands on your character.
Chameleon.
No bad character.
Number one.
Aga naga me.
Pulling a boko fire.
Fire.
Pulling a muli lunga gocha.
We met a beautiful girl, no bada bada. Mkwano ya guleka, she no wano bada bada. Oh, kusatu ya yori nakalema. Yesu viso mkwano muna katele gulema. Mkwano kwa ika nakalema nakulima. Kajini ungera, mkwano kunyuma baby ungera.
Tugende muhuli de mputuale kata. Uno mukwano rujolu kutule pata. Etisela buyonze seta gangata. Nikuwa kalaba ya enebata. Bali njogera kukatimbo muyewe ya wasa mukwano saba. Kaima kasune kugita. Mkukaka sante sinza chita. Bakwem. Ina deriva babi neba go sino fish. Sama say a pleasure, sama dema say a punish. Nemba se metele say a better than they have a telephone. Yo loco loco data checking in a Spanish.
Same Jira no ke koyo yo 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 sweet jamu
jamani karema
no you body good baba wabu wabu
Tabula,
oh, Mutima, who are the one in Kenya, and we know that it was someone.
That was music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English to Africa service of The Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, including producer Douglas Impuga and engineer Tiang Wang, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, don't quarrel with the crocodile when you are traveling across the river. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. Good evening, Africa.
And I want them to know, oh yeah, hey, you're the one I love, one and only, hey, the one I want to, I want them to know, baby, hey, you're the one I love, I'm open as I know, the one I want to, I saw one baby, one for your one.